Hey guys, and welcome to Hunting Land, presented by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. If you'd like to stay up to date on hunting tactics, land management, land values, and land market dynamics, this is the podcast for you. This week's show is brought to you by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. If you're frustrated with typical hunting and fishing magazines and tired of reading content, then for guys that are up in the North or up in the Midwest, check out Great Days Outdoors Magazine. Don't get left behind following the guidance of guys who don't fish or hunt in your home state. You can pick up a Great Days Outdoors Magazine subscription, and it will help you become a better Southern outdoorsman. Great Days Outdoors Magazine can be found at your local Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Tractor Supply Company, Rural King, Bass Pro Shops, or you can save online at greatdaysoutdoors.com. If you're looking for a beautiful state that's packed with outdoor attractions, check out Mississippi. Of course, you know about the Mississippi River, but there are a lot of great rivers for paddling throughout the state. Coastal Mississippi's waters are perfect for deep sea fishing or exploring the state's five uninhabited barrier islands. You'll find national forests with campgrounds, trails, and recreational sites, 25 state parks, and wildlife management areas too. Whatever you like to do in the great outdoors, you can do in Mississippi, where wanderers are welcome. Plan your adventure at visitmississippi.org/outdoors. I'm your host, Joe Baia, here today with my co-host, Butch Theory. Butch, I got to get to my place, man. It's been too long. I got a lot of stuff to do, a lot of little odds and ends that I need to be working on, preferably working on from, you know, a golf cart or a four-wheeler. It's freaking hot out there.
Yeah, I don't want to, definitely.
You know, you can definitely overdo it in the woods this time of year. And, but man, there's just always something to do up at the camp. I mean, I've got a list. It just gets longer. Every time I go, I feel like I knock a couple things off and add most often more things than I knocked off to the list. I can't believe we're going to be planting food plots. I mean, basically 60 days. You know, I don't know about you. Up at my place, about mid-September is when we start watching the weather. I'd like to get seed in the ground anytime from mid-September through that first couple weeks of October, just depending on rain. And if you're talking about planting mid-September, I'm going to want my seed in by Labor Day, and I'd like to go ahead and get my seed ordered a month ahead of time, which means August 1, which means here we are, mid-July. You better be figuring out what you want in your blend. You figured out what you're planting this year?
Yeah, man. We usually just kind of keep it pretty simple, you know, with the bob oats, a little bit of wheat, some rye. Definitely time to start figuring it out, though. Like you said, it's going to be here before you know it. That October 15th, bow season's going to be here very quickly.
I know you guys have always blended your own mixes, and I commend people for doing that. It's definitely a way, seemingly, it's a way to save money. But, you know, I've screwed it up a lot. I know this year I'm going to be trying to take that off my plate, and that's what today's show is going to be about, is all the different ways that you can really screw it up in terms of blending your own and everything you need to think about if you're going to try that, because there's some landmines. It's not as simple as going online and, you know, searching for how many pounds per acre of this certain seed that you've got to plant and then going out and doing it. There's definitely some things that can trip you up if you're not prepared for that. So I know this year I decided to just take the seed blending off my plate. I've been playing with that for years and I enjoy it, but I also screw it up a good bit. And it got to be kind of a pain too, just trying to weigh and mix and deal with all that bulk seed out there in the woods when you're trying to plant food plots. And, you know, but there's a lot of people that still like to do that. I commend people for trying that. You do know all the variables on your place, and it makes sense to want to dial it in perfectly for your property, your soils, your conditions. But there's some things about creating food plot seed mixes that are not common knowledge. Maybe they are for people, but it wasn't common knowledge for me. I realized pretty quickly that I'd been doing things wrong for years. So today, that's what we're going to be talking about, is the right way to create your own food plot seed mix, and make sure you watch out for these landmines that are out there. There's quite a few of them. Don't make the same mistakes I did. There may be some more mistakes. Definitely would love it if folks want to reach out to us and tell us what we missed today. But We're going to get into everything that we at least know about with Caleb Weaver of Southern Seed and Feed. Welcome back to the show, man. Tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do with Southern Seed and Feed, and really your expertise in creating seed mixes for food plots.
Hey, guys, I really appreciate y'all having me back on. It's been a pleasure to work with Southern Seed for many years now, and with a background in wildlife management, habitat management, some forestry work. Fell right in with Southern Seed with working with food plot blends and how we do our research and development to try to put, as a hunter, which I am myself, very passionate about, try to put everybody in the best position possible to save some money, to grow the best food plot out there, to provide the best nutrition you can for your deer, but to do all this in a timely manner. And it's been a really, really cool thing over the past 5 years to really narrow down the absolute best varieties of feed and blends that we can to put hunters in the driver's seat when it comes to deer season.
It seems like every year when we get around to talking about summer food plots or fall food plots, there's some new magic bean out there, you know, that everybody wants to talk about and is really excited about. And, you know, I think that there's a lot more to it than one particular seed to be planted. You got to think about your soils. You've got to think about the climate in which you know, where your land is.
Yep.
There's a lot that goes into it. And I know for me, it's a rabbit hole that I can find myself down and spend hours, literally hours and hours reading and thinking and calculating. And all of a sudden I go, I still don't know what I need to plant or in what ratios I need to plant. And
that's right.
Even when I do land on, all right, I think I'm going to plant these seed varieties, then there's some very confusing things with the labeling of those seeds. If you're trying to make your own blend and do this yourself.
Oh yeah.
And I've done it wrong many times trying to do it myself. So we're going to get into that today.
Even now, it gets overwhelming when you're sitting down trying to look at all this and trying to crunch all these numbers. I would rather go and take a physics class again than sit down and just sit there going, oh my gosh, how do I measure all this out and weigh it to make sure everything is correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, it can be very overwhelming. Spend a lot of time on Google.
Not practical always. But anyway, you know, I mean, first thing probably need to talk about is the climates in which we plant. What's good for a guy in Michigan is not going to be the same as what's good for a guy down in Alabama. So how does the climate determine what you guys put in a seed mix?
Well, I'll start with this. So Southern Seed and Feed is located in Macon, Mississippi. We do grow a lot of our own wheat, our corn, all you said the triple clean corn bags you guys see, that's all grown right there in that area. The wheat is grown right here in Southern soils and other plants as well. So when we're looking at our customers, we're looking at, for the most part, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, North Florida, Georgia. We're looking at these southern soils, and something that we have in our bag, for instance, let's say Belonza clover, that may not grow well in Michigan, where it stays in the negatives all the time. So when we're looking at what types of seeds or forage varieties that we're putting into here, the first thing we're going to take into account is what type of climate is it going to go in. Where I'm in Alabama, what I normally see is a little bit of everything. You have sandy soils, you've got heavy clay, you've got, you know, swamplands. We've got a little bit of everything. And so we also, when we're going through trying to find these different varieties of seeds, is what kind of crosses all the boxes as well. In case you have a food plot, say that runs up a hill and it starts wet on one side and it runs up the hill and it gets into some heavier clay going up, we really try to make sure that, is it going to handle cool temperatures? Because in the past 2 years, we've been down to, let's see, 5, 6, 7 degrees in December. And I think it was a year and a half ago, 2 seasons ago, we got down into the negative. So what's going to do well in these hard freezes that we get every now and then to where it's not going to kill off your plot? So we really have to take a lot into consideration with how much rain we get down here in the South, or how much rain we may not get here in the South with some extreme droughts that we've had through the past 2 planting seasons.
Caleb, you know, Joe's place and his soil on my place, and even really from food plot to food plot on my place, the soil can be much different. How does the soil determine what you put in your seed mix?
So when we're looking at soils, we're looking at the seeds that we choose, we want to make sure grow in a wide variety of pH. So I'll go back to Belonza clover again. I like it. It's a good product, but it grows anywhere from 4.5 to 8. Let's take wheat as an example. Wheat's pushing 20% protein. It's got a good fiber, roughly 20% fiber. But wheat's going to grow well in shade. Wheat's going to grow well in sandy soils or wet soils. Going on into, let's say, different types of forage turnips that we plant. Apen turnips you'll find in some of our mixes. That grows well in a wetter environment. That's a forage turnip that handles browsing. So we look at each individual soil. So let's say purple top turnips is going to grow well in more of a loamy soil. So we try to make sure these blends contain something that will perform well wherever these seed blends go, if that makes sense.
Does make sense. So like Butch was saying, I mean, I'm actually sitting here staring at a map of my place, and I've got 9 different soil classifications on about 200 acres.
Ours could be very different.
Yeah, you talk about the, you know, I mean, Butch, you've spent enough time on my place. You know, we've got some fields that stay kind of wet. Other fields are kind of real sandy and dry. You know, it's very different. And that's the rabbit hole that I'm talking about of going, well, does the seed blend that I'm going to plant in, you know, in the cricket patch, is that the same seed blend I should be planting up on the rattlesnake patch or over on the cook patch? Because each one of those food plots are in completely different soil classifications. And you could spend hours trying to figure that out. So what you're telling me is that you want to solve that equation with seeds that will work well in a variety of pHs, a variety of soil types, whether that's sandy, loam, or, you know, bottomland, more clay soils. Y'all have several different blends that y'all make. I mean, are there any that, you know, if somebody gives y'all a call and says, hey, look, I'm totally in bottomlands, that's all I plan in, or I'm totally sandy, everything we got is super sandy, you know, are y'all going to be able to say, all right, yeah, you know, these are the blends that we develop specifically for that soil classification?
Most certainly we do. Bug Magnet's one of our blends. That's a great one. That's got wheat. It's got a little bit of extra wheat. It's got the apen turnips. It's got stuff that handles shade. You can plant this in the woods. You can plant it in your swampy areas. Now, I'm not saying it would do well underwater, but the deer, right, they don't have any snorkels on to go down and get it either. So we've got different varieties that handle different soils better. For instance, Superbug is one of my favorite products that has purple top turnips in it. It's got different clovers in it. It handles all different types of soil well, but it's going to handle your little bit sandier soils. It's going to handle your loamy soils better than, for instance, let's say Buck Magnet. We really started in the wrong place, fellas. We need to talk about soil tests. And when you're doing anything in the ground, you need to get a soil test done. And I know folks are probably tired of hearing it, but I'll say this. You can go to your local extension office. There's third-party opportunities to get a soil test done. Take you a small little shovel, go down about 6 inches, grab a handful of soil, put it in the bag, drop it off, and it will save you so much in the end. You're going to get literally a step-by-step guide on what you need to put in the ground to help these seeds grow. Because for me, I don't want to plant all these seeds. I don't want to go through all this time. I don't want to spend all the money on the seeds and then it perform poorly because I didn't amend the soil the way that I'm supposed to. And, you know, some of the benefits that you get from this is way more biomass on top, transferring that nutrition to your deer. You have a better root establishment. They can definitely handle stress better, be it from chronic herbivory from your deer or drought or, you know, floods or something like that. But that's the first thing anybody needs to do when they step off and decide, I'm going to plant a supplemental food plot. First thing, get your soil tested, and you're looking for ideally 6.5 to 7 pH.
You know, I can't agree with you more on that. We developed some new food plots on my place this year, which was formerly pine plantation. So we're de-stumping and root raking, you know, what had 30 years of pine trees on it. And I did soil samples there. And then we've got some of our other food plots that have been in no-till rotation now for about 3 years. And the soil test came back so different in terms of how I needed to amend the soil with lime fertilizer. And, you know, a $20 soil test saved me about $250 an acre.
There you go.
In fertilizer and lime application. And
that's right.
That was tremendous for me to see. And it's also just really cool to see how the efforts that you're making are affecting the soil. You know, I'm seeing that my pH is coming up and that, you know, it's a better planting conditions on some of those older fields.
Well, that's a great point, Joe. Like, Caleb, how often should we, you know, test our soil? Is it something we should do each spring before we go into the whole planting season? Or how often should you test your soils?
Well, when you get your first soil test done, it's going to give you an idea of what you need to put down to make your soil, call it perfect, to get to the pH range that you need, call perfect. And that can get very expensive. So some people do this incrementally. And at that point, I would be testing every year, maybe every 2 years, but most folks will tell you, go ahead and just get the sample done, see where you stand. For my area, my local extension office charges $10. That goes to Auburn University. I get an email back in about 10 days, and I know exactly what I've got to put down and exactly where I stand. But things do change, guys. You know, in a sandier soil, you have your fertilizers, they'll leach out a lot quicker. So you may think, hey, I'm in a really good spot because I put down X amount of product last year, and you're really not. Going into seed rating here in a little bit, if you overseed, then you may have depleted your nutrition more than you thought you did last year. So I, really, every year, spend that $10. It's not a whole lot of fun to do. It's a little bit of a hassle to run out to the property and do that or wherever you live. But it saves, Joe, like you said, it saves so much money in the long term. And you may get a soil test back that says, hey, you're good. Thumbs up. Don't spend any money on this year. Hallelujah. That's where you want to be.
Yeah, it is worth however much it costs. It always ends up worth it. You know, I've planted y'all's blends for years now. And one of the things I notice on the bag is always says coated with Deltag seed coating. What are the benefits of those seed coatings? Why should somebody make sure that they've got seed coating if they're making their own blend or they're buying a blend? Why is that important?
Well, you can add seed coatings to your blends if you decide to do it yourself. But all of our premium blends come coated in Delta Ag. And if you're not familiar with Delta Ag, they're out of Mississippi. And it is a powdered-like coating that we mix in with our seeds. And what it really does is aids in the stress period in those early first days of emergence. And you get around 60-65% more viable plants in that first emergence period, where your plants will go into a lag phase where they're very susceptible to stress. And that's heat, that's drought, that's deer feeding on them, anything like that, whatever stressor actually is. But you get a boost in nutrition, a boost of energy to push them right on through that period and get those plants on up to where they're pushing and producing like you need to. And basically just protects the seed. And for the past two seasons, we've had a terrible drought. And a lot of folks planted, a lot of folks ended up having to replant. But with this seed coat, you get it in the ground, you lightly drag it and cover it, it's going to sit under the dirt and just wait on rain. It's not going to rot. You're not going to have any problems with it. You can count on that seed coming up when you finally get a decent rain on it. And it's going to be, like I said, so much more, going to be a lot stronger.
More resilient.
It gives you a little more leeway too. Like, yeah, with the whole drought, last year we were going, oh man, okay, we can't go this week. And then it was just too late.
We didn't plant until December last year. Some of our fields we planted real late November and in December because I learned my lesson the previous year. We were in a drought situation the previous year, and Butch and I planted, and then we replanted. So I learned my lesson. We just got to wait it out sometimes.
That's the great thing about a food plot blend that has a coating on it, for instance, Delta Ag, like we do, is a lot of hunting clubs, you know, they have work days. You have these certain couple, say, three weekends, you got to make a work day. But one of those is a planting weekend. And I totally understand. You got to get everybody in there. Everybody's on board, helping, working. And a lot of folks don't have that opportunity to say, all right, we got rain coming on Thursday. I'm headed down to the club or I'm headed to the land on Tuesday to start planting.
Right.
So when your seed is coated, it sits underneath that soil and it is ready to go. It's protected. And it's going to have that boost of energy and nutrition it needs to shove on through once you finally do get the rain. And in some cases, you know, 2 years ago, it was 4, 5, 6 weeks that my seed sat there and waited because I had a rain chance. It looked good. It looked like a continued rain chance, which is also important. And I planted 2 fields on one property, if I remember correctly, and it went from 80% to 60% to 30% to nothing. And it didn't rain for 4.5 weeks, 5 weeks, and everything came up and looked great. I couldn't have been happier, really.
Yeah, that's a big, big deal. Like you said, I mean, everybody's on a time crunch. I'm lucky in that I don't have that much to plant. So, you know, I can say, all right, I see the rain coming finally. All right, I'm taking Wednesday off and I'm going to go and get it done, you know, in a day. But, you know, if you've got a lease with, 4,000 acres and you got 50 acres of food plots to plant, you can't just do that in a day just because you decided you wanted to or the rain's coming. You know, before we jump into seeding rates, because that's one of the things that's really confused me over the years is seed coatings when it comes to seeding rates. Going back to soil samples a little bit, one of the things that's really helped me a lot, and you were mentioning it's not a lot of fun, and I've gone out there with a soil probe and done that whole deal. It's not a lot of fun. There's a product out there called the Collect and Go Soil Sample Kit, and it looks like a green bucket. It's got a hole in the bottom of it, and it comes with its own auger that is powered by a, just a cordless drill. And you just run that auger down through that hole. It pulls that soil sample up, and you can, as fast as you can bend over, you can take a soil sample. So you can go all the way through your food plot. It takes what it was kind of an arduous task and just turns it into something that really makes it like walking around, taking a stroll through your food plots. That one product has made it where I'm like, yeah, let's go take some soil samples. It'd be done in, you know, just real short, real quick. It's not messy. I love that product. If that is something that is if it's a non-starter for you to get out there with your soil probe, go on Amazon and look up the Collect and Go Soil Sample Kit. It's made my life a lot easier in that regard. But, you know, seed coatings is one of those things that can screw you up if you're trying to create your own seeding rate. And this is one of the lessons I had to learn the hard way is, you know, you take something like a bag of clover and you look up a seeding rate, you know, and it says, all right, we're going to plant 5 pounds per acre of this clover. And so you get a 50 pound bag and most of us assume 50 pounds of seed, 5 pounds per acre. All right, we can do 10 acres, you know.
That's right.
But if you dig a little bit deeper and you start to look at the tag on that seed, a lot of times you'll see that the weight of the seed is only, say, 50% or so of the entire weight of the bag. So in a 50-pound bag of clover, you're looking at 25 pounds of actual seed.
That's right.
So then you're going, all right, wait a minute. So now I can only do 5 acres. What's creating that extra 25 pounds of weight? It's the seed coating, right?
Yeah, it gets worse than that even. I've got an example sitting right here. Let's say we're going back to a coated Balanza clover, 52.81% pure seed, which amounts to 26.44 pounds of seed. And then you have, what's even worse, is only 85% germination of that. So you're only working with 22.5, roughly, pounds of pure seed.
Yeah.
So then, if you go through and plant your Balanza clover at, like you said, we were thinking, 5 pounds per acre.
Yeah.
What just happened? You know, you go back and look at your plot a month later and you're going, well, I really don't see anything. What happened here? And that could be just as easy, simple mistake going over saying, I need some clover, throwing that bag over your shoulder, walking out, throw it in the truck, and you never even paid attention because you didn't know you had to.
Right. I've done it. I have definitely done it and come back and gone, I don't see that much clover in here. Why don't my food plots look like Grant Wood's food plots? You know, he's got clover everywhere, you know, and that's the reality and that's just one thing. You know, like you said, you've got the weight of the seed coating, you've got the germination rate. Talk a little bit about the pure live seed. You know, how does the testing of pure live seed play into those seeding rates?
Well, I mean, you know what's actually going to grow out of it. So let's take a 50-pound bag of buckwheat at 98% pure seed, you're only getting 48 pounds of pure seed. Then 90% germination is 44 pounds that you're actually working with. Then you got to figure in how much of this am I actually supposed to plant per acre, and now how much do I actually have to work with? So you have to adjust your rate up a little bit versus off the pure live seed off of the what you're thinking is a 50-pound bag.
Right. And then you got to take all that and get out in the field with the bugs and the sweat and the tall grass and not having a great place to do all this stuff. And you got to weigh it out. You got to mix it up.
That's right.
You got to get it in your drill or in your hopper and do it the right way. It's a lot to think about and do on your own. You guys have been testing this for how long? I mean, you've done this when you guys put a you know, 50 pounds per acre recommendation on the bag, does it take into account these proper seeding rates, the factors of pure live seed, the germination rate, the weight of the seed coatings? Take me through how y'all's seed blends take into account all those various factors in something that somebody in Macon, Mississippi can trust that 50 pounds per acre, if that's what it says, or, you know, Joe over in Hertzboro, Alabama can trust that, or, you know, somebody that's getting this, whether they've got a sandy soil, bottomland soils, you know, all those kind of things, they can trust that those seeding rates have been thought out.
What we recommend out of our bags is 50 pounds per half acre. And that's what you'll find in a lot of, from a lot of companies, is 50 pounds per half acre. It can be stretched a little bit depending on your deer density, but be careful there. And that's a subjective question. How many deer do you have to a lot of folks? But we'll go through that here shortly. But when we're looking at these seeds, we're looking at, is this seed a forage variety? Has it been manipulated to carry the characteristics to produce more forage, or is it trying to, say, produce more grain? A lot of seeding rates will tell you that, and it's based off grain production. It has nothing to do with deer feeding on these. So they're designed for food plots. When we're looking through this, I'm looking at going all the way down to, like we said, live pure seed to see what I've got. I want to see what varieties are going to work the best. What type of biomass does that put out? Is it going to over or under compete? And then let's take into account the stress, the climate conditions, the soil. Then we're going to take into deer feeding on them, which is what we want to do. So we're looking through each of these different types of forage varieties that we put in these blends. We want to make sure that they don't over or under compete, like I said. But more importantly, you want to make sure that you plant without overdoing it. More importantly, when you're planting these seeds, it is important to stick to the planting rate suggested, because if you overdo it, you can really stress your plants out from exhausting your nutrition, having to go back more often with fertilizer. And so when we sit down and look at these different seeds, what I want to see is how are they going to perform next to a forage oat versus a regular oat. Is that oat going to grow wider? Is it going to grow taller? Is it going to handle grazing pressure better? So we sit down and weigh all these things out. So for years and years, we have planted different food plots side by side with exclusion cages. And I'll pause for 1 second. Please put an exclusion cage in your food plot. If nothing else, it's really cool. You actually get a real idea of what your plants are doing. They're not being grazed upon. And you can see, how well do I need to up my seed a little bit, my rates, just because I've got a lot more deer than I thought I did? Or is it everything doing just fine? And you can see these plants come up. You can see what kind of biomass they actually put out. And you can see these forage varieties in action as they grow unimpeded.
Hold on, Caleb. I gotta stop you there for 1 second. I want to talk about the exclusion cages just a little bit. I'm going to give you another little tip. Here's a pearl. Put your exclusion cage at your max. If you've got a bow stand on your food plot, put your exclusion cage at your max distance that you're willing to take a bow shot. So if you're saying, hey, I shoot out to 35 yards, put your exclusion cage 35 yards from your bow stand. It'll do one of two things. Gives you that visual to say, you know, I don't need to range that deer. That deer's in range. The other thing it does is, a lot of times those deer, they go and walk over to that exclusion cage and they eat that stuff that's kind of poking out of the sides. And they'll walk across the field to go over there and check that exclusion cage out. I've just learned that over the years. It's also a good place to hang a little scent wick if you want to put a little scent out there. But anyway, sorry, I couldn't resist. Keep going.
No, I appreciate it. Any tips, definitely. But yeah, what we're looking at here is balancing out pounds per acre of all these different varieties of seed that we're putting in that have been tested in different types of soil and different climate environments for years and years and years, planted next to each other. And like I said, in different soil types. And then this is a cool season plot or a warm season plot. So I've only got one shot this year to see if I can figure it out. And then we got to go back to the drawing board. So when it comes to anybody trying to plant their own seed mix and do it themselves, mix it themselves, I would recommend starting with a pencil with a good eraser.
No doubt, man. I have done it over and over and over again. I want to go back to what you were saying about the recommended rates, because that's something I think that everybody overlooks, including myself, is that when you grab a bag of seed, where do those recommended rates come from? I thought it was very enlightening what you said, is that those recommended rates are a lot of times they're put there for a farmer who's trying to grow grain. They're not necessarily put there for you and your forage variety trying to feed deer. So where do they come from? And then, you know, is that something that you've got to kind of take with a grain of salt if you're Googling, you know, recommended winter wheat rate, depending on where you find the answer?
Yeah. And then if, when you look at a bag of seed, when you pick it up, we've already been through, you know, pure seed, germination, if it has any coatings or anything like that. So a lot of times what you'll see is, especially in the cattle world, when you're planting for grazing, you'll see a seed, there'll be a recommended planting rate per acre. There'll be a recommended time frame to plant it. And then here's a little caveat. Don't graze that plot until it's 4, 5, 6 inches tall. Well, now what do you do? Because we're, what we want here is deer to be all over this. And we don't, we can't really even help it half the time. Is deer, they're coming to this plot, but that's what we want them to do. So when we are picking these different varieties, we're looking at how well does it handle a stressor? Does it, is that a drought? Is that wet areas? Is that chronic herbivory, which is what we're looking for there? We want our deer in our plot. So the planting rates can really change when you're measuring out or getting different varieties, because these forage varieties that I'm talking about that we have found that grow best in the South over years of all this research, is they're designed to handle grazing. They're designed to handle climates in the South. They're designed to handle a wide range of pH. And you can really, you can go less seeds on those. You can, you may have to go with more seeds on something else that is designed more for grain production. There's a lot of really, really mind-blowing, overwhelming information when you sit down and start really reading into exactly how many pounds of this type of wheat or forage oat or whatever do I have to put in this mix to be successful.
Not only that, you have to think about how much wheat you put in your blend affects how much oats you put in your blend. I mean, you can't just go out there and say, all right, well, they recommend 5 pounds of blants of clover and 50 pounds of wheat and, you know, 40 pounds of oats. And then if you throw all that out there, you're going to have too much seed, right? I mean, you've got to balance the equation. And that's another point you've got to consider here, is that there's only so many nutrients in the soil, right? So if you plant more wheat, you're going to have to plant less oats, or vice versa.
And some things may handle different soils better. For instance, like we said, wheat is going to handle shade, going to handle wetter areas. Oats, different side. But oats are going to sort of expire a little bit quicker in cold, cold climates. So take that into consideration. If you go heavy on the oats and a little bit on wheat, I've heard a lot of folks say a lot of time, I don't want to mix. That's got all that wheat in it. Well, where exactly are you planting that? Because this may be very beneficial to you versus going heavy on oats, if that makes sense. Because that you're going to need that wheat at some point. Those deer are going to need that nutrition. They're going to need that fiber coming out of that wheat mixed in with everything else. And now you've got to, like you said, figure that out. How do I weigh all this out to where when the deer need these different types of seeds that we have in here, for, let's say when our turnips come up and become palatable, how are they going to compete when they're big wide leaves, and I've already got a ton of oats and a ton of wheat. I've got clover working to come up, and it's getting ready to do its thing. How do I do this right and not choke the entire food plot out?
All right, folks, we're going to be right back. Y'all take a minute and check out some of our sponsors. NCX. As a landowner, the more income I can generate from my land, the better I can take care of it. That's why I use NCX. NCX helps over 20,000 American landowners like you understand and maximize the value of every acre. Find new revenue streams for your land with programs like timber, carbon, wildlife habitat, solar energy, and more. Get started with a free account at ncx.com and discover the true value of your land. First South Farm Credit. What does a farm mean to you? Maybe it's just a piece of land where you can go relax or enjoy the outdoors. Whatever the farm means to you, First South Farm Credit can help you finance or refinance that perfect piece of land. As a successful financial cooperative, First South shares its profits with its borrowers in the form of a patronage refund, which lowers your cost of borrowing. To find out how First South can help you, visit their website at firstsouthland.com or call them at 800-955-1722. They are an equal housing lender. You know, there is a lot that goes into it. Another thing you've got to think about is your planting method. I think folks that have listened to this podcast for very long know that I'm really into no-till food plotting. I think the majority of folks are still using conventional tillage, regardless of the way that you plant. I mean, that's going to affect things. I mean, if I'm doing a no-till food plot where I'm broadcasting seed, you know, I don't have bare soil, that will affect the mix, you know, whereas if you're trying to plant something like corn or soybeans where you need a little more planting depth, if you're trying to do this without a drill, that might affect your seed choices versus if you have a drill or if you're just using conventional tillage and you're able to cover that seed and get good seed to soil contact. So how does the planting method affect the seeds that should be chosen for the mix?
Well, planting methods, really everything we have is designed to grow. You don't have to have a drill. It's all designed to grow with good ground contact. But there is a lot of folks going that direction of no-till planting. And you know, a lot of folks will spread seed into a stand, bush hog that down over the top of it, and you will do pretty well. I don't really recommend that straight for me or from Southern Seed and Feed, but I would say the best way to plant is still to put a disc on the ground, turn the dirt lightly, broadcast your seed out, and then a light drag right on top of it. You want everything we have is designed to grow in 1/2 inch to 1/4 inch deep. That said, you can do well with the no-till side of things. You can do well with no-till. You can do well with conventional, turning the dirt with a disc and dragging it in. But that's what I would recommend. Now, at our recommended planting rates of 50 pounds per 1/2 acre, I'm expecting some good ground contact with this. So you may have to up your rates a little bit if you're gonna no-till right into a stand and then bush hog over the top of it, because your germination rate may not be quite as good as it would if you've got good ground contact and ground coverage.
Caleb, I want to back you up just a tad. You were talking about the mixes, and we planted a good amount of the Southern Buck spring summer mix. You know, it's got the brown top millet in it, the sorghum, the soybeans, the sunflower, iron, and clay peas. How important is it to give the deer different offerings, and why? Are you just trying to spread out the browse pressure, or are you trying to give them different nutrients through different stages of the growing season, or what's the most important thing to look for there?
You actually nailed it all. You really do. Deer love variety, but there's different plants that become palatable at a different time. Let's say our spring and summer mix, it's got soybeans. Soybeans are candy to deer. They're going to eat those suckers as fast as they can. And if you're only planting a soybean field, there's a lot of research to show if you're not doing multiple acres, 5 to 10 acres, then it may not even make it because of the grazing pressure. But with iron clay cowpeas, with sunflowers, with brown top millet, sorghum, for everything to grow up on, for those iron clay cowpeas to grow on, there's different stuff there for the deer that are going to eat your sunflowers. A lot of folks don't know that. Be prepared. You may not see a whole lot of sunflowers make it past several inches tall. They love them for some reason. But it is a variety. It is to spread out grazing pressure. And that's part of some of our fall blends as well, is to offer a variety that's palatable all year long to your deer to keep them coming to your plot, not only because they desire what tastes good in there, but it is very nutritious, and they know that.
There's been a lot of turkeys in our mix already, too. It's been in the ground for not even quite a month, and there's been a ton of turkeys in there.
You know, and that's something I've noticed too, Butch. You know, since I planted, it was immediate. You know, we saw a response and wildlife coming to the fields. Some of that was because I did a no-till planting. I still don't have a drill, so I'm doing a broadcast and cover type planting.
Right.
And there are limitations with that, and I recognize those limitations. I will be getting a drill. But with those limitations, one of those limitations is that and turkeys are going to go out there and tear that seed up. The hogs are going to go out there and find those soybeans. You know, I mean, they're going to eat a lot of your seed. Rodents, birds, they're going to eat some of your seeds. Some of your seed's going to sit on top of the soil and germinate and never get that taproot down into the soil. You know, there's going to be some seed loss from the wildlife, from the environmental conditions, if you're choosing to do that. You mentioned maybe upping that rate. You also mentioned maybe upping that rate if you've got significant browse pressure. Take me through how you would do that. You know, if you're starting at a base of 50 pounds per acre, say with your spring and summer mix, and 50 pounds per 1/2 acre, I'm assuming that was more for your fall food plot mixes.
That's right.
If you know you've got one of those two scenarios where we got too many deer, we're going to get hammered, or I'm going to plant with a broadcast, no-till type planting, and I know I'm going to lose some seed to all these other environmental and wildlife factors. How would you gauge it? Obviously, it's not going to be scientific, but would you up it 50%, 100%? How would you do that, Caleb?
Well, you know, it's one of those things. It's going to be site specific per spot and how your whatever method you choose. Like you said, yeah, I would probably up it about 50% on the bag, another 25 pounds if I'm going to broadcast into standing vegetation, then go back and bush hog over the top of that. Now, when it comes to deer density, if you don't plant enough, and I've got some friends down here that run some really, really cool operations down near the river, but I can sit in a stand over there and see 60 or 70 deer in a 4-acre plot.
Wow.
I would call that a lot of deer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, when I'm talking to folks at different speaking events or trade shows and I ask them what's their deer density, they'll say a lot. That's a very subjective term. So it's really site specific. If I'm planting a 1-acre food plot and I know that I have X amount of deer that are going to feed in here, and you can, you know, this is why you need to write everything down. This is why exclusion cages are important. You can say, well, last year they mowed this thing to the ground. I need to add an extra 10, 15, 20, 25 pounds and see how that well that does based off the grazing pressure, because they will just sit there and paw the ground and eat a hole in the ground if they have to, if they're that hungry. That also comes into play with your habitat, your surroundings. What do your neighbors plant any food plots? Is there any agriculture in your area? How hard are they going to hit that food plot on December 31st?
Mm-hmm.
How hard are they in there for the rest of that season when they really need that nutrition in January and February and recovery rates on your bucks? So I would, it's always something to keep in mind that if you're not going to go with the conventional method of disking, spreading, and then covering, then maybe you need to up a little bit to account for some of that may not come up. Or if you have a lot of deer, and I mean a lot of deer, like I said, site specific, high deer density, they're going to need more food. Now, that said, I hear it a lot of times, guys say, that says plant half an acre per bag. I'm going 2 acres per bag. I really don't recommend that. Because a plant that's being browsed upon is continuously having to grow new roots and combat that with pushing more nutrition up. So a plot that's being browsed upon is actually more beneficial to your deer than walking out into a plot. And I've heard it said a million times, look at this big, beautiful food plot. It's knee deep. They're not getting the benefits they need out of that as they would 6-7 inches tall, where they're actually utilizing all of those varieties of seeds, and those seeds are working to regrow what's been nipped off and continuously pushing nutrition to the deer.
You know, you're talking about the subjective nature of deer density, browse pressure, and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I agree with you totally. I mean, what a lot of deer to me might be a few deer to somebody else, or vice versa. So when you use an exclusion cage, I feel like, and I'm no biologist, but I feel like is that the only real somewhat scientific method that you can use to estimate your browse pressure? Because I've just using our plots as examples, we get to the end of a season, you know, we're getting into the deepest part of the winter, and a lot of those food plots are just lip high, you know, I mean, they're nailing it. This, and you can watch it. It's interesting if you've got game cameras set up on your food plots where, you know, even you get a couple of warm days in the wintertime and those fields will really respond. They'll green up and you can tell they grew.
That's right.
And then a couple of cold days and they're back to looking pretty sparse and the animals have just nailed them. How do you gauge if you've got a browse pressure issue enough to say, all right, yeah, we're going to up our planting rates?
Yeah, pretty simple. Just spend some time walking through the food plots. If you've got to get on your hands and knees and look down in there and see how well it's actually doing with how many deer you've got grazing on it. And that's where game cameras come into play so well, because you can't always be there to see what's going on. And you have to take, when you ask about the science of it, there's so many variables that you have to take into consideration with what's the weather doing. Have we not had any rain? Is we having some strange drought in the middle of the wintertime? Have we had an excessive amount of rain? Like I said, your surrounding areas, did my neighbors decide not to plant this year? What happened? Did timber get cut? What happened? So you have to take all that into consideration. But, you know, if you've got to sit down and go through your hands and knees and look and see, hey, they're actually feeding this all the way to the ground, I need to add more next year because I've got way more deer than I thought I did. And that's where I would actually go back to game cameras to be able to monitor. Wow, I've only seen 2, 3, 4 deer in the daytime come into this plot, but there's 17, 18 deer at night feeding through this. This is what's happening to me.
And it's tough too, because you take like last year as an example, we had to plant really late and we knew we had drought conditions. And so you're not going to get that growth if you don't plant until November when you'd normally plant late September. You missed almost 60 days of growing and you're just not going to grow. And so, you know, you're trying to make these decisions, and whereas last year could have just been an outlier.
That's right.
There's just so much to think about.
For sure. When Caleb mentioned it earlier too, we've been trying to be really good about writing down what we did on which plot that previous year. And that goes back to, you know, the same kind of principle as putting a game camera on your plot. You're like, well, you know, we should definitely up this 25 pounds of this year. I mean, they crushed it, you know, it was mowed down all the way through January or February or whatever. So I definitely like that point as well, Caleb.
And I would keep in mind too, if you increase your seeding rates, you're going to have to go back and add fertilizer at some point, because like I said, you're depleting your nutrition from the ground faster. So keep that in mind. If somebody doesn't, and I recommend going back in mid-December timeframe, somewhere right in there, just kind of keep an eye on the plots and the weather and all that type of stuff, but go back in and give them another boost of nutrition to push you all the way through the season and carry those deer like you need to. Because at that point, they are somewhat depending on you. This is a supplemental food plot, but they're depending on that to be there. So you've trained them more or less to come and feed on a nutritious plot, and they're needing that nutrition.
Yep. And talking about that nutrition, we mentioned earlier that the Southern buck mix, they liked that. The turkeys liked it a lot, I've noticed so far. Do you guys have seed mixes that you recommend for, you know, deer or turkeys or, you know, any kind of difference?
So our spring and summer blend contains wild game sorghum, sunflowers, brown top millet, and that's going to obviously benefit your birds tremendously, anywhere from your upland birds, your turkeys. I think it's really cool. I've been planting it for years, and I've actually started to see some more quail coming in and out, which is very difficult this time or this day and age, especially in Alabama, wild quail. But you got to think about when you're planting these food plots with wheat, oats, all those types of things, they are going to make seed come springtime. So not only your deer getting another benefit there, they're feeding off the tops of those, your turkeys, your quail. Turkeys are going to be coming through. Those plots are going to be thick throughout the wintertime, hopefully, if you've got everything nailed down like you should. Or I should go back and say, you know, if your plots are thick and looking good through the wintertime, the turkeys, they're going to hold bugs. They're going to hold little things that the turkeys like to go through and pick out. But then when it comes to the spring, summer, there's a lot of variety in there to really support. You know, you have nesting habitat at that point when these plots get up, get thick. And then you can continue to bush hog. You can continue to knock the tops off of it. And your clovers are going to do well until the heat finally gets them.
You know, Caleb, I want to take you back to your fertilizer recommendation, because that's got me thinking a little bit. You mentioned, you know, you recommend folks kind of keep an eye on things, maybe go back mid-season and hit those fields again with some fertilizer. If you get your soil samples back and you got your recommendations of how much fertilizer, how much lime that you're going to need to add, how you need to amend that soil, if you wanted to plan for a mid-season or a mid-growth period fertilizer application, would you recommend that people hold back half of that fertilizer, a quarter of that fertilizer, or is it going to be in addition to the recommended rates from that soil sample? Because what I've noticed on my place is putting the amount of lime and fertilizer down that's needed at planting time, sometimes that's a bear. I mean, it, like, in the sense of just hauling that much material from the seed and feed store out to the place, it's a multiple trip scenario if you're planting large acreages. And it would be really nice for me to, you know, selfishly, to just go, all right, I'm going to order half of my fertilizer at the day we plant, and another half halfway through, or maybe three quarters of the day we plant, and a quarter, you know, halfway through. What are your thoughts on that, freshening things up?
Well, it would be an addition to. So what your soil test is going to tell you is this is how we get to this certain pH. And once you've applied that, then you'll be there. But you got to think, now it starts to roll back down the hill. These plants are consuming that nutrition that you put in there, or consuming these resources that you put in the ground. And basically what you're trying to do is maintain. And talking about our spring and summer blends, another major benefit from it is the soil building capabilities that these plants will give you to save money on fertilizer come fall. So that's why it's also important, again, do it every year, because you may be building to a point to where hopefully your soil test comes back all thumbs up, so don't worry about it this year. But then at that point, you do need to remember, like we talked about, you're depleting these resources out of the dirt, so you need to go back in, freshen them back up. That way you maintain that pH that you're looking for.
Well, we started out talking about the magic bean example. Of course, every year there's some new seed variety that is, you know, the latest and greatest thing, but deer seem to like whatever I plant. And I'm sure there's some things that have some increased draw, you know, but I don't know. I can't speak for everybody, but where I'm planting food plots, there's still a lack of food on the landscape. If we zoom out and we look at things from a, you know, tens of thousands of acres, the wildlife doesn't have enough food. So if I plant anything, really, it seems to do a good job of attracting wildlife. That being said, are there any innovative or unique seed varieties? What I found interesting about what you've been saying is that it's not so much about a new seed, but it's more of a variety of that seed that y'all focus on, because that seed's more of a forage focus as opposed to grain production. But anything new that you guys are testing out there on the test farm?
No, we've always got a little bit going in the background, trying to make sure that what we offer is the most competitive. What we offer puts out the most biomass, puts out the most nutrition. And there's always something coming on the market, but it's not always anything better. That's why we've got all of our test plots. That's why we do all of this research, is to make sure that, hey, we don't come out with the new thing that does underperforms and ultimately takes away from what our customer, the experience he gets out of it. Because if our food plots are successful, hunters should be successful. And the most important thing to me is that our deer herd, the nutrition that they get out of this, sustains them throughout one of the most crucial times in their stress periods in their life, which is wintertime, the other being the dead middle of summertime. So we've always got something going on in the background, trying to make sure that we stay providing the greatest amount of biomass and nutrition for our deer and our birds.
Caleb, you've done a good job of explaining to people who are going to go out and try to do this themselves everything that they need to think about. It's not as simple as just selecting seeds. You really do have to do some math. You've got to look specifically at the bag of seed that you're buying, and take into account all those things we talked about: the pure live seed testing, the germination rate, the weight of any seed coatings that may be on that seed, making sure you're matching your seed variety and choices to the types of soils in the climate that you're planting in. You got to take into all those factors into account if you want to have success. Luckily for folks, you guys have also already done that, at least, you know, for our folks planting in the South here. If somebody wants to look for you guys, you know, in their local seed and feed, what do they need to look for? And if they have any questions, want to reach out to you guys and say, hey, you know what? I think Joe Bush didn't do a good job answering my question about my place. What do I need to go ask Caleb something about my specific setup. I'm doing no-till planting in bottomland soils with a high deer density and, you know, all these things. How can they reach out to you?
Well, the best way is to go to our website, southernseedfeed.com, and you'll find a dealer locator tab right there. Any one of our dealers will have my information to be able to get in touch with me, and they can call, or I'm more than happy to my number to be given out to be able to work folks through how to be successful using our products. But that's going to be the easiest way to do it. Just punch in southernseedfeed.com, Google us, call the office if you need to. We'd be more than happy to walk you through it. They can put you in touch with me, or you can talk to one of our specialists there at the office as well. And then to find out different information on our products that we sell and what is in these blends, you can go to our website as well and click on the wildlife tab for wildlife food plot mixes.
Caleb, I always like talking about food plots. Every year I feel like I get a little bit better at it, but every year I also am reminded of how little I really know. And it's just tough too. It's tough for the average recreational food plotter to remember all this stuff. I know Butch and I will be calling each other here in a few months going, hey man, what were we supposed to do again? You know, it's just
never fails.
How much herbicide goes in the sprayer? You forget all this stuff. It's nice to know that you guys have done the testing, you've done the work, and we could just kind of put that part of all this out of our minds, because what's going to happen is you're going to get up there on planting day and you're going to have a dead battery on your tractor. Or,
oh man, you just nailed it. That happened to me on Saturday. It was crazy. I was going to plant all of my summer, our spring and summer mix this Saturday. I'm about a week and a half later than I wanted to be. I was gung ho Saturday morning, got out there, had a dead battery in the tractor, had to get that going. And the day was just a list of what can go wrong. And I really do believe, guys, if I had to also sit out there with four, five, six different things and weigh out different seeds and then mix them in the hopper and keep going, I probably would have quit. That'd have been it. It was a terrible day. But the fact that I could just zip open a bag of seed and pour it in and just catch a gear and keep going, that's really what saved the day, to be honest with you.
Anything you can do to make things easier, save some time out there, it's worth it, because there's always going to be something you didn't see coming. There's always that tree that's laying down in the road you didn't know was going to be there, and you're going to spend some time sawing it up and moving it out of the way. There's always that tractor tire that goes flat. There's always that dead battery or that busted hydraulic line. There's always something, for sure.
At the end of the day, time is all we really have. And if you can save on some time, then it's a win.
No doubt, man. Well, thanks a lot for joining us today, sharing your knowledge on this topic.
Guys, I really appreciate it. Thank you so much. I've enjoyed it.
All right, folks, we're going to be right back. Y'all take a minute and check out some of our sponsors. This week's show is brought to you by Texas Hunter. Since 1954, Texas Hunter Products has produced the best engineered and finest quality feeders and hunting blinds in the industry. The Texas Hunter brand has become synonymous with quality and durability. By sticking to premium standards, the company delivers tough, long-lasting products that meet the real-life needs of anglers and hunters across America. Their fish feeders, deer feeders, hunting blinds, and outdoor accessories are among the highest rated in the industry. You can trust that your purchase from Texas Hunter Products will meet your needs for generations to come. To learn more, visit TexasHunter.com. Baker Metalworks and Dixie Supply. Baker Metalworks and Dixie Supply offer numerous items to help get your project done right the first time. They carry a variety of different panel profiles and your choice of colors and gauges with all the matching trim and accessories. They also offer a full line of hardware items and post-frame building design. Their friendly and knowledgeable sales representatives are always willing to help answer any questions or concerns you may have. Contact them with any questions or to get a free estimate today. Baker Metalworks and Dixie Supply, your metal roofing headquarters. But you know me, I'm the ultimate analyzer. And I like the idea of creating my own blend, because I know what the exact soils are on my place. You know what I mean? Like, I know all the variables that I need to know to be able to create my own blend on my place. And I get going down that rabbit hole and I enjoy it. It's not arduous. You know, it's just, I like the learning aspect of it. But what I've found over the years is that I would think I had it right, but in reality, I'd be screwing it up because there was some factor that I didn't take into account when I did my math equation. Like, I mean, I tell you one I've screwed up for years, and that's that you go buy a bag of clover seed and it's half as much clover in there as what you would think is what's in there.
Yeah, got to read the fine print.
I have messed that up so many times, and I really have just gotten to a point where there's so much to do. And I think I've brought this up on here before, but when you're managing a piece of property, on your way to check off five things off your list, you're going to write down 10 more.
Oh, yeah, easily.
You break something on the way to check off one of those. Well, that just became a new thing on the chore list. And I'm learning that anytime I can take something off my plate, I need to take it off my plate.
Simplify what can be simplified.
But that being said, you do have to know what you're looking for out of the person or the people that are going to take that off your plate. And, you know, that's why we brought Southern Seed and Feed on here, is because all these variables that we're talking about that you need to consider if you're making your own food plot blend, they've already figured all that stuff out.
Yep.
And that's just one less thing to worry about.
There's a lot to it, man. They've been doing it for years and years and years. I've got it dialed in.
Well, that's going to wrap it up for us this week. Appreciate you joining us. We want to make it easy for you to listen, so here's a handy option for you. To get the podcast emailed to you each week, just text the word hunting to 773-770-4377. Again, just text the word hunting to 773-770-4377. you'll join our email list. And wherever you are listening to podcasts, go ahead, subscribe, rate, and review. Send us a written review. We'd love to hear from you. If you got a show topic that you are interested in and like to see us cover, just email us at pros@landhunting.com. That's going to do it for us. Y'all stay safe out there. We'll talk to you next time.